Hey guys, good evening. Welcome to the Service Without Excuses podcast. We are glad to be with you here. I'm recording this on a Friday evening, and I truly have what I feel is an incredible guest on tonight. Incredible for many reasons. But first and foremost, before we get into that, I want to thank our sponsors, Sotellus, sotellus.com/Rob Lyon, R-O-B-L-Y-O-N. Like the city in France, not like the king of the jungle, L-Y-O-N. So think about sotellus.com/Rob Lyon. They are the Cadillac in the top level, in my opinion, of review management software. So check them out and check out a demo. I think you'll love them. Truly an honor to have this gentleman here tonight, Mr. William Branham, if I have said that correctly. He is a former Navy SEAL sniper instructor, as a matter of fact. Spent 26 years in the SEALs, and we're going to discuss a lot of different parallels and where he is with his life right now after retiring back in 2018. And we're going to get into some examples of leadership, which is huge. We all need this. And of course, discipline, structure, and ways that we can deal with things differently, including some of the things that he has now in his own business. So William, welcome, my friend. How are you, sir?
Thank you, sir. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
And again, thank you for your service, buddy. I really do appreciate it. We all do. So I want to talk to William tonight a little bit more about some of his experience being on the SEAL teams and understanding that a very small portion of people in the United States in particular actually join the military. My stepson is in the, he would be considered, I guess, in the Air Force. He's the Air National Guard. So he's been there. He's actually at Fort Dix here in New Jersey. And he's been in there. And when we were given a speech today, and they said less than 1% actually joined the military. I will probably say less than 1% of that 1% gets the level of this gentleman here being on the SEAL teams, not let alone being a sniper and then having to have that type of, I can't even fathom. But please tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
So I grew up in Meridian, Mississippi, a little town. There's not a lot there. I've been back several times. I actually just took a trip back there to visit my grandmother for her 93rd birthday. And I was heavily involved in Boy Scouts because there wasn't a whole lot else to do other than like hunting and things like that. I wasn't great at in school. Not that smart of a kid. I didn't really apply myself to school, but I applied myself to other things. I always knew that I wanted to be some sort of a commando or a ninja when I was a kid. And so I went on a national jamboree. We were poor, so one of the scouting leaders actually paid my way to go to this event. And it happens every 4 years, and scouts from all over the world come to this event. It was an event where I met George Bush Sr. and I met Steven Spielberg. I didn't even know like the significance of that at the time, but I just was like, oh, that's cool. And he taught us cinematography merit badge. So I didn't take that, you know, forward to do anything, you know, cinematic, but it, you know, I met someone cool and I watched some cool laser light shows. But while I was on that event, I always knew that I wanted to be in the military to some fashion, whether it was, you know, in the like an Army Ranger or, you know, like John Rambo or John Wayne was a Green Beret in the movies. So those were kind of my role models. Chuck Norris was in Delta Force and they had these dirt bikes that shot rockets. And I still to this day want to do that. I haven't had a chance to do that yet. I was a part of Delta Force, so maybe that's why. But I've worked with some of those guys. And so between my 11th and 12th grade of the summer, between 11th and 12th grade of high school, the Navy recruiter called me and he was like, hey, have you ever thought about joining the Navy? And I was like, I'm from a Navy town and I don't really like the uniforms. I didn't like the, you know, these kids that were, you know, freshly in the Navy, they kind of act like idiots because they're just like they went to boot camp and they were like, you know, immersed into discipline. And then they're going to like a technical school and then they're like, I'm free. And so I can act a little bit like an idiot. So I didn't really like those people. I'm sure I was that same idiot after I graduated from boot camp and went to the technical school that I went to. The reason that I chose to become a SEAL was because of the water aspect of it. I always knew I wanted to be in a small military unit, not like big army, big, you know, big green machine or anything like that. And someone said that the SEAL teams, like there were no books or movies or internet or anything else like that back in the day. Not to say that I'm old. I'm still a very young man. I'm only 25 years old, at least in my heart. So there wasn't a lot of information out there. You know, I wanted to be a ninja and a commando. And someone said, well, the SEAL teams, they have, you know, they scuba dive, they jump out of airplanes, they shoot guns, they blow stuff up, they run around in the woods, in the jungle. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want like all the jungly stuff, because I like playing capture the flag and hunting. And I wanted to shoot guns, I wanted to blow stuff up, and I wanted to be on a small elite team. And they said, the SEAL teams, that's where you want to be. I'm like, okay, check, sign me up. So a Navy recruiter called me. He's like, hey, have you ever thought about joining the Navy? I'm like, yes, I want to be a Navy SEAL and an F-14 pilot, because Top Gun was out at that time also. And so so I went down and to the recruiting office. They showed me this video on like really cheesy recruiting video for the SEAL teams. And like, these guys are the best of the best. So I'm like, okay, where do I sign? And then where do I fly F-14s also? And so they're like, you hold on, we got some stuff to do. So I joined the Navy basically the summer between 11th and 12th grade. And then I graduated high school. And then 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, I was off to boot camp. And away I went.
Absolutely.
Started my journey.
So where did you go from that standpoint? You said you wanted to be a SEAL. I don't know exactly how it works. I'd imagine you don't just walk in, you go through boot camp, and all of a sudden you go through SEAL training, but I could be completely wrong on that.
It's not exactly, actually today it's close to that. But back okay. then I had to have a Navy specific job. So mm-hmm. my dad wanted me to get into electronics because he thought that was the future. He was right. So I chose to become a gunner's mate, which is, you know, these are guys that work on big gun systems and big missile launching systems out on in the fleet, out in these big gray ships that float around out in the ocean. And so that was one of the jobs that you could do to be a SEAL. There are some jobs you couldn't be a SEAL and some you could. And I chose that one because it had electronics and guns. Who doesn't love guns? So I found out very quickly that being a gunner's mate has almost nothing to do with guns. It's a 6-month course. It's all about hydraulics, electronics, and pneumatics. And so first of all, I went to boot camp. I took the SEAL screening test and I failed it the first time I took it. And so they say, okay, not a big deal. Get stronger, go to your A school, take the test again while you're in A school. And then you can get orders to go to SEAL training, to go to BUDS, basic underwater demolition SEAL training. And so this was up in the north of Chicago in the middle of winter. Oh. And I was like, dude, it's cold. And I don't like getting up early in the morning. And I'm a little bit, I know I'm in good shape. I know I can pass the test, but I'll take it later. I'll take it when it warms up. And so these were some tactical errors that I made about like not having the discipline that I needed to accomplish my goal. Then we had, you know, I'm about 5 months into this 6-month school, and that, you know, I was high enough in the class academically to go to another school, which I thought I'll go to this other school for 4 more months. I'll get in better shape and then I'll go to SEAL training. I didn't talk to anyone about that. I just made that assumption on my own. So I chose these orders. I went to Virginia Beach and there was a SEAL team right there. So I plenty of motivation, worked out every day, ran on the beach. And then about 2 months into this 4-month school, I say, hey, I want to go take the screening test to go to BUDS. And they're like, why? You're not going to BUDS. You took orders to this school. So you're going to go to this ship in Yokosuka, Japan. And so I was like, but what if I fail out of the school? They're like, well, you're still going to go to that ship in Yokosuka, Japan, because that's just the way the Navy works. So I graduated. I didn't fail out of the course. I'm not a quitter. I went to that ship in Yokosuka, Japan. I did my time. And then I called my detailer and said, hey, I want to put a package in to go to BUDS. And he's like, that's awesome, but I will not let you go because you're too critical to the Navy. You see, the Navy does not care about guys wanting to become SEALs. They care about doing jobs in the Navy, those big gray ships out there in the ocean. You know, Sea Power is, you know, the way that we own control the world is really through the Navy. Army's awesome, but if you control the ocean, you control supply chains, you control, you know, harbor security, you control really everything. So the Navy cares about those big gray ships. They did not care about me going to SEAL training. So the detailer said, you're too critical. I went and took the screening test again. I failed it a second time. I crushed everything. I beat everyone that was taking the screening test with me. I was the only one taking it to become a SEAL. Everyone else was taking it either to become a Navy diver or a Navy EOD guy. I beat them all on the swim, the push-ups, the pull-ups, the sit-ups, and I beat them all on the run. I'm wearing long pants and boots. They're all wearing shorts and tennis shoes. And I come in. What happened is I got a little cocky. I'm like, I crushed everyone. I'm the best. I'm the fastest or whatever. And I came across the finish line and the guy calls out my time. And I was like, what? That can't be right. I just beat everyone. I won. But really, I failed. Everyone else passed their test. I failed mine because we have the highest standards in the SEAL teams. So I had to take it again. And this time I passed it with no problem. There was like, I'm like, I can't fail it again. So I submitted my package to the detailers so that I could go to Buds. But my detailer, I would call him about once a month and say, hey, can you release me to go to Buds? And they're like, sorry, you're too critical to the Navy. And I was like, but the reenlistment bonus is like $5,000 as a gunner's mate. And for the SEAL teams, it's $20,000. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And he's like, you're too critical. You're not going to Buds. So I got letters of recommendation. I reached out to as many people as I could. I'm like, this is my goal. This is what I've always wanted to do. And again, like the SEAL teams was not like sexy. No one really knew a whole lot about it. And finally, the chief of naval operations, who's the most senior guy in the Navy. The only people who are more senior to him is the Secretary of Defense and the President of the United States. He came to my little ship in Yokosuka, Japan, and had, you know, CNO's call. He's like, does anyone have any questions? I raised my hand. I said, I joined the Navy to be a SEAL. I think I deserve a chance to go. My detailer won't let me. Will you let me go? And he was like, you're right. You'll be at first. He turns to my commanding officer and he says, is he a good guy? And he's like, yeah, he was the sailor of the quarter this quarter. He's like, check, you'll be in the first class after your PRD, which is planned rotational date, which was like 6 weeks later. And like 6 weeks later, I'm, you know, everything that I own, I'm having a bag and I'm off to SEAL training. So I get to SEAL training. SEAL training is 6 months long and it takes me a short 13 months to get through that block of training because I didn't prepare myself, before I showed up. I had some injuries, some broken bones, some other stuff that we still don't know what was wrong with me. But I eventually graduated and finally got to a SEAL team 13 months to the day later.
Well, the one lesson I hear out of everything you just said, and it just screams it over, a determination, no matter what, over and over. And when you're talking about the military, I've heard this more than once. The military does not ask for permission. Wherever they want you to go, they're gonna put you. They don't care. You know,
they're
you
called
want
orders.
This,
they're not called invitations. Yeah.
No. Exactly. So, you know, you don't have to, you know, it's the same thing with a corporation. A corporation is going to look at this and say, you know, if you work for a large company, you're too important over here. We can't put you over in the marketing department or in the logistical department because you're too important to us over here. And at the end of the day, you just want to be where you want to be. You want a job or you want a career or something that makes you successful, that makes you happy, makes you want to be part of it and fulfilling. And your right. whole talk and of being driven to say, this is the goal. This is where I want to be. This is the outcome. I know I want it. I know I can do it. Come hell or high water, this shit's going to happen. No question right. about it. And that's what I really respect. Now I'm going to get past that and say, I've understood from what I've heard, and again, you could tell me yes or no, that is the hardest goddamn thing you ever go through in your entire life is Buds training. Was that, or did it get worse?
I would argue that sniper school was just as hard as Buds, just in a different way.
Okay.
You know, people talk about Hell Week is you know, this week in Buds where you don't sleep. They let you sleep for about three hours or so, which was actually terrible. I didn't want to sleep. And waking up from that sleep was one of the worst days of my life. Like waking up and they're like, where is everyone? Get out. You're not supposed to sleep, because we were going from like Sunday night. Actually, it started Saturday night because there was the fire alarm in the barracks kept going off. So you couldn't really sleep. You had to go outside while the thing is still ringing. It went off like four times this that Saturday night into Sunday morning. Sunday morning, you're prepping, getting everything ready to go for Hell Week to start off on Sunday night. And so we went nonstop until about Wednesday night at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I think. And they're like, all right, go get in your, in the, they had these big tents set up on the beach with your wetsuit in there and everything. You never wore a wetsuit during Hell Week. Go in there and sit on your, lay down on your rack, on your cot, and do not fall asleep. Are you kidding me? I haven't slept in 4 days, maybe five at this point. So I'm like, tried very, very hard to like stay awake. And then, you know, we fell asleep and I think they let us sleep for a couple hours. And then, you know, it was it. And then, you know, they would walk through and like check on us. They told us later, but to make sure that no one died in the tent, because you're not being, you know, constantly watched at that point. And they called everyone out. Like, who said, you said, we told you not to go to sleep. And they're like yelling at us because you will fail. Everything you do is wrong in Buds, at least in the beginning, because they're just trying to like see how you adapt to the stresses that they apply to you. And then they called us out. And this was the first time that I really looked around and paid attention to how many people were left. And we probably lost 70% of the people that were still in the class at that point. And I remember like the ocean is like 25 yards away. It was so foggy, I couldn't see the ocean. This was the first time I had been dry and warm the entire week. And I'm like, ooh, it's kind of shivery out here. And I'm dry and warm. But you know, I'm happy about that. And I'm like, wow, we lost a lot of people. Then they're like, who said you could sleep? Go hit the surf. And me running out there and getting in that frigid Pacific Ocean one more time when I was dry and warm was the hardest single thing that I had to do in Buds. Just throw myself in that water one more time. And that's, I literally grabbed myself, my shirt, and I like threw my body down into the ocean. But there's another event in Buds that's even harder than Hell Week, in my opinion. And that's called Pool Comp, where they like, it's like underwater jujitsu, where they like tie your hoses in knots and you have to do everything perfectly to the T on a breath hold. And generally by the time before they were done tying hoses in knots, I was already like out of breath. I'm like, okay, I'd like to breathe today. And so that was another event that I failed the first time I did it. And then I passed it the second time. Just because I didn't go through the procedures properly. Like they're very strict on attention to detail, especially underwater. So it is very difficult, but it's totally attainable. All you have to do is want it. You just have to have the desire and you just go execute it one event at a time.
I would think mindset has a lot to do with it. Obviously you have to be physically fit. You have to have the physical toughness to pull something off, but I would imagine mentally, you have to be just as tough. You have to be persistent and say, listen, you know, you got to be stubborn. I mean, without a doubt, beyond stubborn, yeah.
I think that's true. I mean, you know, a lot of times they talk about, you know, it's 90% mental and 10% physical. I would argue that it's 50-50. Right. Like you have to have some level of fitness. But if you're moderately fit, I didn't prepare that well going into Buds. And I was strong enough. I was okay in the water. I was comfortable in the water. I'm still not an awesome swimmer, but I can swim. And I was not an awesome runner. I thought I was pretty good, but as soon as you get in that soft sand, you lose about 40% of your stride and power and endurance until you learn how to run in the soft sand and just get better at running. I got better at running and I got stronger when I got to SEAL training.
Excellent. I imagine you went to Coronado for the training then. You were outside San Diego there?
Yeah, in Coronado, California.
Okay. Yeah, I know they have a friend of mine was in the Marines. I don't know how they contacted, but he was in Virginia for something and he trained with some people that were in the Navy at the same time. He says whatever he was doing for the Marines, something they were doing joint together. I don't know. There's a kid telling me this stuff, so...
Right.
But it's pretty cool. The story told me, I'll tell you real quick. He says we were out on the beach doing something. And he said there was a boat, something out on the water. And they were told to look out at the boat. And there was a light coming off the boat. And he says we were doing something, you know, running or doing some kind of drills. And he says we look down and the instructor says, look, and he looks straight down. There's a guy with a sniper dot his head. They're all around them at the floor. He goes, literally, they were there in minutes. Like, we didn't even know they were coming. And this place was dead quiet. He says, they were kind of just to mess with him. They're like, he says, those are the SEALs, boys. He's like, just messing with you or whatever. But he says, that's their job, is to come in when nobody knows. And they come in under dark, and it was pitch black, you know, under darkness. Right. And complete whatever they were trying to do with messing with these guys, I guess. But I guess it was fun. But how much do you feel, you know, people have, and I tend to want to focus on this as much as possible, you know, at least at this point, but how much do you feel what people's perception of what a SEAL is, or what a special forces person is, maybe recon, maybe, you know, whatever, a ranger, how real is the perception? You know, we see movies and we see things that people say, oh, this thing is pretty close to it. And then some people say this is absolute garbage. What's your thought on it? Because you've obviously gone through it and understand it more than just about anybody.
I think let me think about this for a second. It's the movies and TV shows and things like that. They make it look super sexy.
Gotcha.
And they're like, oh, and there are pieces of it that are very sexy, but what you don't see is the work, like all the work that leads up to that 30 seconds, 2 minutes of like sexiness, and then all the work on the backside of it. So, you know, like it's very cool, like running through houses and clearing stuff and being able to communicate without using words and just knowing what everyone is around you is doing and being very safe and very effective and fast. That is a tremendous amount of work that it takes to even figure out how to move, how to communicate without any sound, how to move and know what your buddy is going to, like, there's so much work. And then even before you get there, you have to you start from somewhere. Maybe you're taking a helicopter in, maybe you're driving in, and then you park, and then you get out and you walk another like mile and a half or 3 miles or 8 miles, you go coming over a mountain. And then you're like, you're pretty much exhausted by the time you get where you're going. And then you have to do the action, you know, very violently. And then you have to leave. So that sexy piece right there in the middle that people see, they don't see all the suck factor that leads up to that. And then they only see that little sliver of it.
That's where I was kind of going with you. Obviously, I'm sure you've seen the movie The Sniper with Chris Kyle, and it kind of put up you know, an idea of the amount of discipline that a sniper would need to just sit there. And I don't know if it's true or not move for long periods of time. I'd imagine it's probably something you need to do at times without even being noticed, because, you know, you're trying to hide and, you know, obviously not be seen by anybody. And you know, you're protecting people. From what I gather, you're the one that goes out in front and made sure that they can perform whatever they need to do. And if there's a target that's trying to take them out from the other side, that's your job, is to take the shot, I guess, so to speak.
Right. And being a sniper, that sounds super sexy. And the shooting is only maybe 10% of the actual job.
Right.
It's like going in before everyone else. There'll be a group of you going in. And maybe just observing a target for days at a time, you know, recording patterns of life, communicating back to the headquarters. And then maybe the assault force comes in and you've been out there for 5 days. And then, you know, and just like preparing and then getting there. There's like this huge, it sounds cool. It's not sexy. It's boring. It's hard work. It's hot. It's cold. You can't move. It does require a tremendous amount of discipline and just like mindset to just sit there and be there and do that job.
You know, I went to a presidential rally. No matter how people are on the spectrum, but let's say it was the past president, I went to a rally, and I'm going at looking at the very top. It's in Wildwood, New Jersey, a little bit south, and there's, of course, Secret Service, and there clearly you could see they're not trying to hide it. Snipers sitting on top of the roof and people specking things out. And I sat there, and, you know, it was freezing cold. I mean, it was right on the water. It was January. It's not warm in New Jersey in January. There's colder places, but it's pretty cold.
Sure.
And these guys, I'm watching them as I'm sitting there. You know, I'm freezing myself. And I grew up more in the mountains, so I'm more used to the cold. But this was cold. And they didn't move. Like they did not move. I'm sitting there watching this. I mean, good 45 minutes, and my eyes are starting to get tired. This guy did not move an inch. And if he did, like you couldn't even, like you see a little bit of body motion, you wouldn't even notice it. Didn't move. Stayed right in that spot no matter what for 45 minutes. I mean, he probably did it for a lot longer than that. And I thought to myself, wow, I mean, just to have the mental wherewithal to sit there and be so focused on what you're doing. And I think your experience, and now you're an entrepreneur too as well with your business, it's a natural match because you have to have the ability to follow direction and to follow through. But at the same time, you have to have the ability to think outside the box and say a situation changes, because like anything in business and in life, things change in a second. Things change in a second. And if you're able to sit there and look at it and go, okay, I have to be able to go with that. I have to be able to run with that. I have to be able to say, okay, this is, you know, was not in the plans, but fuck it. That's just the way it is. We've got to be able to go. I would imagine that would be tremendous. As an entrepreneur, I had good training. I worked for other companies for 17 years and I had all the training. Nothing like yours, but mine was more the training on the business side of it, understanding it. And when I opened my own business, the one thing I didn't know how to do was, frankly, start a business. I knew how to run somebody else's business, but I didn't have the training to do that. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs may have come from that. Either they come from the side where they just said one day, screw it, I'm going to hang up my shingle and this is going to be my business. And other entrepreneurs are like, I have to get the training. I have to get either an education or I have to get a real world education, which to me is a lot more tangible than getting a four-year degree, is to learn from the school of hard knocks, which means you're going to fuck it up a few times before it comes back and you're going to figure it out. I would think that, you know, these lessons that you're talking about and the level of discipline and structure and training and fortitude and just, you know, going with it would be just such a huge thing to an entrepreneur. I think some of the lessons that you're talking about here can be beneficial to that. Speaking of that, what are some things that you learned being in the SEAL teams, being part of that, that you've been able to take into entrepreneurship, or things that you feel other entrepreneurs can learn from?
So first of all, they didn't teach us how to run a business in the SEAL teams. The military doesn't teach you anything about business. As a matter of fact, I handled budgets and inventories and supply chain and all sorts of other stuff, but they never told me how to sell something. You know, I figured out later on that, you know, anytime we were doing a mission, we had to sell the mission. Like, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we mitigate risk. This is how we do all those other things to achieve mission success. But I wasn't like business focused on like running a business, because quite honestly, the military does not do a very good job of handling budgets or, you know, things like that. There's a lot of knee-jerk reactions to things. But I was able to take lessons that I learned in, you know, just things like that, managing people, managing budgets, managing selling missions, doing things like that, and just having the mindset of like, okay, well, we can't do it this way. Well, what about this way? Or what about this way? And just always problem solving and figuring out how to get it done. And, you know, maybe we're talking about a mission where there's a bad guy, compound, and it's up in the mountains, and there's only one way to get there, and that's up this windy road, and we know that it's already booby trapped, it's mined, there's sentries out there. So how do we get there to get that bad guy? We take a helicopter in and we land on the other side of the mountain, and then we start from the bottom of the mountain and hike up 10,000 feet and then come down 4,000 feet on the other side, and then we start, you know, we assault the target from the backside where they never see us coming, they don't know where what's happening. Under the cover of darkness, and so that's been how I've had to approach being a business owner, is, you know, use these that same level of discipline and problem solving, because, you know, the industry that I'm in, I can't market, I can legally market, but social media platforms will not allow me to give them money to talk about my product.
Right. They will. They give it time. They will.
At some point, yes. But yeah. But in the meantime, I don't have the luxury. I don't have like the budget that like big companies do to navigate some of that stuff. So I have to figure it out on my own. And And some of that is really comes back to this mindset that I've come up with. So my company is Naked Warrior Recovery, and my slogan is to get naked, and get naked means a whole lot of stuff. It's about taking off your ego and setting that aside. It's about, it's a little bit of my heritage. So if you have ever seen the movie Saving Private Ryan, you saw the assault on Normandy. Well, prior to that, the Navy had these guys, volunteers from the Navy who knew how to swim, and they were good with demolitions, go into Normandy, go into the beaches under the cover of darkness, do reconnaissance of the beach where, you know, lanes of travel, lanes of attack, where fighting positions were, write all of that stuff down, and then get back in the water, measure the depth of the water, looking for obstacles under the water. And then they basically built the plan for the assault on Normandy. And hours before that Saving Private Ryan assault on the beach, these guys went back in, again, under the cover of darkness, but taking fire from the beach and, you know, cover fire from the ships out way out in the ocean. And they put demolition charges on the beach. They put demolition charges on obstacles in the water. And as the assault force is launching, they you know, blew the demo, cleared the lanes, got out of the way. And that was the predecessor of today's Navy SEAL. And they were called the Naked Warriors. And they did it again, you know, in the island campaign of the Pacific. But also get naked, it's an acronym. So get is really about taking action. It's a verb. It means take action. The naked is the important part. Naked is, and it's really about, you know, getting rid of your ego and being your authentic self. And there's a lot that goes into that. So the N stands for never quit. And I don't mean never quit, you know, smoking or drinking or anything like that. I mean, never quit. If you're going to start a project, if you're going to start a business, if you have a goal that you want to achieve, you just continue attacking that goal until you finish it. And, you know, there's different ways to do that. And what I decided to do, the way I kind of explain it, the best way to do it is Rome wasn't built in a day. You eat an elephant one bite at a time. All of those cliches out there. What you do is you take this unattainable problem set, this unattainable like goal that you want to try and accomplish, becoming a Navy SEAL, becoming a business owner, becoming whatever it is. And you chop that up into manageable bite-sized pieces, and you attack that piece every single day until you and create these like small victories. So every time you finish one of those bite-sized pieces, you move to the next one. So you have a definitive stop and a definitive start. Because like in SEAL training, it's divided up into, you know, days of the week. Each day is divided up into like 5 or 6 or 7 different events. You know, you start off with, you know, you might have morning PT at 5 a.m. And then you go from there, you go to breakfast. And then from there, you maybe go to the pool. And from there, you go do something else. And then you go to the O course, and then you go to lunch, and then you go somewhere else. But the day is broken up into pieces. And all you got to do is get through that one piece. And then you get to the next piece, and you just build on that. And so if you just never quit on each one of those pieces, you will get to your final destination at some point. Again, it took me 13 months to get through 6 months of training. And you can apply that never quit to anything in your life. The A is accept failure, because failure is the foundation of success. You know, you have Michael Jordan's missed more than 3,000 shots in his career. Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, they were both fired as CEOs of companies that they've started. So failure is this foundation. If you take failure and you just stack it on top of each failure on top of the next, whatever that obstacle is in front of you, you stack enough failures, you're going to hop right over that obstacle, and then you'll have success. So you just accept those failures. Yep, it happened. I learned from it. And now we're going on for the next, you know, for the next obstacle. And there'll be failures there until you have success. So accept failure. The K is to kill mediocrity, because we have this world of social media, YouTube, video games, and we've just sort of become mediocre in our life and in our expectations. We don't really want to like challenge ourselves anymore, and so we become mediocre. And you know, you could make a political argument there as well. You know, there's no entitlement. Like, I don't believe in entitlement. I believe in working, doing work, and getting paid for the work that you've done. And the more value you bring, the more income you will make to bring value. And so the goal is to just kill mediocrity in your life. And it's not always easy. You know, we are creatures of habit, and we end up kind of like, it's easier to like sit there on the couch and watch Netflix than it is to, you know, learn a new skill. Right. You know, you can watch kitty videos on YouTube, or you can learn how to play the guitar, or something like that. Or start a YouTube channel and get monetized for what you're doing. So the K is to kill mediocrity. The E is expose your fears, because fear controls us more than anything else in the world. You know, the media uses fear to control the masses, to control the population. You know, this whole virus epidemic thing, if no one told you how terrible it was, then you wouldn't care. It's like, oh, I got the flu again. No big deal. Right. But we also have these other fears that are, you know, stuck in the back of our mind. They're in these deep, dark places that we don't want to look. We don't want to think about it. But they come out and they control us when we're not, when we don't want them to. And so they like that darkness. They like to not be recognized. And so when you reach back there and you pull those fears out, let's just say you write them down. Like, this is bugging me. And you write this down. I'm afraid of this. And that takes a tremendous amount of courage. And I had a lot of fears that were running around in the back of my mind, and they were controlling me. And it took a lot of courage for me to actually pull those out and like even admit that I had this fear to myself, just like the self-admission of like fear, like, this is bothering me. You know, once I like pulled it out, I didn't talk to anyone about it. I just had to do it up here, pull it from the back to the front. And then if you write it down, now you've completely exposed it. So a friend of mine says that fear does not exist on paper. And it's true. You have whatever, something's bugging you, you write it down and you read it and you're like, that's not a big deal. And so you've now exposed that fear. You control the fear. The fear no longer controls you. And the D is to do the work, because it's all work. You know, we can't just sit around our lives being mediocre and not doing anything, just expecting a free handout or whatever. You have to do work. You have to lean forward if you want to accomplish anything. And that's really what getting naked is. It's being authentic. It's doing work. It's killing mediocrity. It's never quitting. It's exposing your fears and controlling your life, and not let life control you.
Absolutely. I have a little book sitting over here, a guy named Brian Tracy, which to me was a mentor, business mentor. And he talks in the book, not this one in particular, but he has Master Strategies, which is a great book, great business. It's actually on audio or CD, or you get Audible, I guess, now. And he talks about, you know, he chooses not to participate in drama. When you talk about things that are outside influences that tell you how you want to run your life and how you want to live your life and how you should fear this and fear that. And he just basically said, shut it off. You make the decision. I mean, if I hear the news one day talking about this and this and this, and I'm like, I don't believe any of you. How's that? So right. I'm not going to get involved. I'm not putting my head in the sand. I'm not stupid. I don't want to be, you know, blind if something goes terribly wrong. But at the same time, I don't need somebody trying to influence me. I have a brain enough to say, okay, that doesn't make any sense. We're talking about something, a business mentor also, and I have a lot of his books and stuff. His name is Jay Abraham. And I suggest, if you've never heard of him yourself, listen to this gentleman. He is a business, and he always talks about strategy over tactics. That was his big thing. And he talks about, you know, obviously, if you don't plan for something, you don't put a strategy in place, you try to implement something without planning it, without thinking about it, without putting something down, at least on paper. And then, of course, doing some kind of mock execution of what you're going to do. How do you plan to succeed? A lot of people just go out there and they shoot. An example of this, and I use it in, you know, SEO marketing and stuff like that too as well. And you can relate to this yourself a lot, being a sniper. There are two major guns people think of. They think of shotguns and they think of a rifle. Well, a shotgun and a rifle will both cause maximum damage, but they're only one that has got a much higher rate of taking you out than the other one. Shotgun is a scattered shot. So if you take a bunch of shots and you just say, hey, I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff on the wall, or I'm going to take a scattered shot and see wherever the bullets seem to hit, maybe it'll hit the target, maybe it won't, maybe it'll make a mess somewhere, but maybe not where I intended it to make that mess that I needed it to make, or make an impact, rather, of where I need to make. The rifle, however, is very strategic, and growing up around guns myself as a kid, the rifle was much more impactful because it was very strategic. You shot it. I think a lot of people look at things and they say, I'm going to take the shotgun approach. I'm going to hit everybody all at once with all of the stuff that I have and everything that I offer, and they're going to love me, and that's awesome. but they don't think about the rifle approach to saying, you know what, if I pick my target and hit the target exactly where I want it, won't I have more of an impact? And I talk about this in social media. People do SEO campaigns and they just say, I'm going to hit my entire market with all of this SEO. This is going to be great. You know, everybody's going to see it. And the problem is, it isn't really strategic. In my business, I have a service business here in New Jersey. When I do SEO, I said, I'm going to go to this town, make a maximum impact on that town with people seeing the search words and the content that I'll put out. And then I'm going to go to the next town. And then I'm going to go to the next town. And I'm going to the next town. I'm not going to hit five towns at once. I'm going to finish what I started in town one before I move to the next town. And think about that. That's sort of like a battlefield plan, because you're not going to go and just try and take over an entire country. I wouldn't imagine if you're over there and we're invading another country, they're going to do it by, let's just hit everything all at once. I've never seen it. And I can't see them ever doing anything like that, because there's no strategy to that. And people right. do that in business a lot. They just say, I'm going to hit everybody. But it really doesn't make any sense, because if you're all things to everybody, you're nothing to anybody.
Right. I mean, if you look at like the biggest companies out there, the most successful companies out there, let's just use Amazon for starters. It started off as a book company out of a garage. And now it's grown into this behemoth thing. But, you know, they started somewhere and they focused only on books. They weren't worrying about being part of Whole Foods or anything else. They were going to be the best book company supplier in the world. And so they focused on books and then grew from there. But yeah, you're exactly right. So we have, you know, we have had to do missions where we ended up calling it a block party. So we go in and we think we know right where the target is. And we go and we take that house out. Okay, well, he wasn't there. Maybe he's over there. And we end up taking over a complete city block. You know, it's incredibly exhausting, and maybe eventually find the guy or maybe not find him at all, you know, based on what the intel is that we're using. But we think that he's in a 10 digit grid square. So that's very like that within like 10 square feet or 10 square meters. And we shoot for that, where he is in that 10 square meters. And oftentimes he's not there, but then we make a plan and we transition out and we get bigger. But we're very strategic in how we do it. Okay, where does the intel say that he is now? Okay, maybe he's over there. So we go that way. We don't go like, you know, start in the middle and shoot out. We very strategically look for where the target is. But you talked about kind of mission planning and kind of writing your plan down. So in the SEAL teams, you're 100% right. I'll just say even in the military. So there's a mission planning process, and people get hung up on the plan, or they get hung up on the execution. The two things that are the most important about the mission planning process. So you have the mission, that's what it is. You have the plan, that's what each person does. And then you have the execution. But between the plan and the execution, there's something that we call rock drills or a dirt dive. And that's where you go and you practice the plan. You don't practice like the actions on the objective. You don't practice driving somewhere. We already know how to do all of that stuff. You practice the transitions. You practice how we get out of a vehicle or get into a helicopter or get out of the helicopter. Where does everyone go when we're done with the mission, the transition back into vehicles or back onto a boat or back into, this is where the plan, like the execution falls apart. It's mundane. No one likes to do it. It's the super unsexy part of, you know, doing the operation. But the difference between professionals and people who are super successful and the people who are not, even in the SEAL teams, it's the people who practice those transitions are the ones that are the most successful. And because it doesn't matter what happens, you've gone over contingencies and things like that, and you know what to do when that contingency happens. Just getting a head count is like the most complicated thing to do, but it's the most important thing to do. It seems simple and mundane, but you can't leave the target until you have all the people back, you know, in the vehicle and it's time to go, or back in the same room in order to like go get in the vehicles. So it's those details, those attention, that attention to detail that's the most critical to the mission planning. And then the other piece of the mission planning process is the after action report. And that's where you bring all your lessons learned back and you incorporate them into the next mission and into the next block of training and things like that.
very, very businesslike. It really comes down to it. I mean, like I said, they don't intend to be, but they are. Everything you've said here in this entire recording of the podcast has been a business lesson. Absolutely everything, because it applies to what you're trying to do with your life. You're putting things down and you're trying things. And, you know, there's the old saying, you throw stuff against the wall to see what sticks. There is going to be that. There's going to be failures, and you have to accept failure. And failure is just part of life. I failed many times. I'm sure you failed at some point in time in the past. I think everybody
has failed. I'm still failing every day.
Exactly. And I make a mistake on a consistent basis. So how did I end up with that? How did that happen? Well, it happens. Suck it up. Right. Deal with it. It's just the way it is, you know, and you move past it. And I really think it defines you how people move past it. Move past things. Everybody has obstacles in life, and they, I can't do this. I can't do this. My spouse doesn't like this. I don't want to do this. I did this. I got divorced. I did this. Listen, I've been through all that. It's not fun. It sucks, but you know what? It's life. And how you pick yourself up and quote unquote dust yourself off, I think really impacts a lot. So I really appreciate the lessons. What I do want to talk more about is how you got to where you are today. You left the military in 2018 with an incredible career. And you started this CBD business, but there's a specific story behind it and how you ended up getting here. And I'd like you to tell our audience more about it.
So just really quickly to kind of go back to your, like those failures, you know, Thomas Edison, he discovered 10,000 ways to not create the incandescent light bulb. So if he had like tried it a couple times and like, you know, 9,000 times and it still didn't work for him, we wouldn't have electricity, or we wouldn't have a light. Light would have come from a different way, but right. Then, you know, he created it after 10,000 failures. And then the rest is history. But so my transition from the military to civilian life really goes right along with that, you know, mission planning. When I got out of the military, I didn't, and I transitioned to civilian life. That was really the hardest military mission I've ever been on. Number one, I didn't have a plan. And when I got out, I didn't have a mission. I certainly didn't practice, you know, going over contingencies. I was in denial about getting out of the military. I didn't want to get out of the military, but after, you know, they only let you stay in for a certain amount of time. And then they're like, all right, time for you to go. And, you know, the new guys to come up and take your place. And that's part of leadership also, is really to train your replacement. But I have baggage, you know, 26 years of service. I have toxic relationships. I got other issues going on. So I have a lot of baggage. I don't call it PTSD. I call it baggage, because some of it is like people put their shit on you and you end up carrying it around. And so I was doing that. And what I was doing was I was using pharmaceuticals and a ton of alcohol to quiet the noise in my head, because, you know, I had a hard time sleeping. I had a hard time, you know, turning off that negative self-talk. You know, people are like, oh, you're a Navy SEAL. You're hard. Everything is easy for you. Or what? I'm like, no, wait, I have the standards for myself are very high. And
you're human. You're a human being.
I'm human. I'm just a regular person. And I, like I said, I've got baggage, and I know that we all have baggage. And so I was not smart about how I was doing it. And I'm much more open now about talking about things than I used to be. I would never display any sort of weakness, because I was afraid of being eaten by the incredible high performers that I was around. And then one day, someone that I looked up to and I respected showed a little bit of vulnerability. And I was like, and no one ate him, you know, no one went after blood. And then there was someone else that I respected. They showed some vulnerability. And I was like, maybe there's something to that, because it actually looks kind of cool. And again, this kind of goes back to getting naked and taking your ego off. And so I knew that CBD could be something for me, but I didn't, like, I was still in the military, that wasn't going to go down that road. And so I got out of the military, and then still a year later, I still hadn't tried it. I'm just drinking myself to sleep every night. And I was having lunch with a friend of mine from the SEAL teams. And I said, I'm going to go see if I can find some CBD here in Virginia, because what you have here might be better than what we have in Hawaii. I still didn't know very much about the industry, only that it came from the hemp plant and it was legal now. So he was like, you want CBD? I've got some back at my house. I, you know, he was an Instagram influencer. People had sent him a bunch of stuff. So he gave me a bottle and I took it that night, and maybe I slept a little bit better and maybe I was a little less pissed off the next morning, but I didn't really notice a whole lot. But what I noticed is after I finished that bottle of CBD, it was about 30 days worth. I was less pissed off. Like, I like to tell people that I live, like, water boils at 212 degrees. I was living at like 210 degrees. I was very, like, my fuse was very short. It didn't take a lot to like put me into like super bad mood, super bad mindset. Like, I'm just driving and I'm just like pissed off and like having arguments with myself. And about things that aren't even happening, but there, that's the fear that's back there that I'm like, I'm arguing with myself about. And so, but what I noticed is I started at like 210 degrees, and over like a 30 day ish period, I went from like 210 to 205 to 200 to 190. Maybe I was 180. I noticed that my fuse was longer. Not significantly, but it was definitely longer, and things didn't bother me as much as they used to. And then after 26 years, I got a lot of injuries. I got a lot of pains and aches and things like that. Like I said earlier, I'm only 25 years old, at least what I think I am. But my body tells me differently. And so those pains, although they're not gone, they just hurt less. Like, some of the pains are very sharp and stabbing pains. They ended up being more dull pains. So, and then, you know, I ran out of that bottle and then things started coming back. And so I tried a different brand and I had very similar results. Then I was at a business conference. I was very interested in the CBD industry. Really, I wanted a company to hire me so that I could learn from them. And I met a girl who had a CBD company at this business summit. And I, you know, I was like, hey, I'm interested in CBD. And she was like, so do you want to do A to B, B to B, B to C? And I'm like, I want CBD. I don't know what you're saying to me. Like, I didn't know, like, you know, that whole piece of it. And so she explained it to me and she was like, and I was trying to get her to hire me. And she's like, why don't you just start your own CBD company? And I was like, I don't know how to do that. And then she was like, you're a Navy SEAL. You can figure it out. And I'm like, okay, check. Fine. All right. So she called me out and told me to put my purse down and stop being a sissy. And so I did. I stopped feeling sorry for myself. And I started researching. And what I found out is most of the CBD out there is probably not good. So the FDA, what I mean by that is the FDA has gone out and they've done tons of spot checks. And they found that about 75% of all CBD companies out there, they either don't have the CBD they say they have in them. They have high levels of THC, like above the legal limit. Right. They have high levels of heavy metals, arsenic, lead, mercury, things like that. It's because hemp is a solvent because of the way that they extracted the CBD from the oil. And it's because hemp is a bioaccumulator, which means it pulls all the good stuff out of the soil, but it also pulls all the bad stuff out of the soil. It's such a powerful bioaccumulator. They're using hemp at Chernobyl to clean the radiation out of the soil so they can go back and repopulate that area one day. So the FDA has gone out and they've found, like, they're like, it's legal, but you should probably be very careful about what you're doing. And so I found all of this out while I was researching how to start a CBD company and things like that. And so what I did is I just started researching suppliers, like supply chain of the company, like what's their processes, where are their farms, what are their practices, things like that. And so I went and found the highest quality suppliers in the industry. I still look today. I have very good suppliers right now, and I still look, and I haven't found anyone better yet. If they are out there, I will find them because I want to sell the highest quality product, because it's like, if you're putting something in your body for medicinal purposes, you don't want to be putting a bunch of poisons in your body.
Right.
And so CBD helped me. It helped me. Like, it was a modality. It's not, it's not a magic pill by any way of the imagination, but what it does it's like a and I can go deeper down the CBD route if you want, but it was a modality that helped me, and it has been a modality that's helped other people. So I want to bring it to help as many people as I possibly can. Some of it, is a modality, and some of it is mindset, and it's working on mindset as well. But for sure, it's helped me, like with physical pains. It's helped me with stress and anxiety. It helps me get better sleep at night now. So that's what CBD has done for me. I'm not a medical expert. I can't make medical claims, but it has helped me in really great ways. Enough that I started my own company. So
the limited amount I've actually heard about CBD is either you get, I mean, I hate to sound like, they pacify you, the credibility, the type of, you talk about drugs and the quality of drugs. I won't put that in the same right. scenario, but you are looking at a better quality product yields a better result. Entrepreneurs, business people put a ton of pressure, for the most part, on themselves. And they deal with a lot of stress and pressure. If you're an entrepreneur, my wife is not an entrepreneur. She, for her to understand what a typical entrepreneur has to go through, that they can't stop. They got, they're like, you're in business for yourself. No, you went from one boss to hundreds of bosses. So it's right. completely different.
Right.
And having that point of saying, okay, I have to have so much profitability, I have to do this, I have to stay, I have to cutting edge, I have to reinvest in my stuff, I have to make sure marketing is at the forefront, I got to figure out what marketing is working right now, what's this, I got to get feedback from my customers, I got to get reviews, I got to get, there's so many variables to it that an entrepreneur's brain doesn't shut off. My brain does not shut
Never.
Off, much like you.
Never.
It never shuts off. I have to take things to, like sleeping pills, to shut down because my brain is not capable of it. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll get there and I'll start typing something. I wrote my whole book at 2 o'clock in the morning that I've just finished. And literally, I have ADD. So for me to write a book is like insane, because to put down words and then go, yeah, that sucked, dude. No, just keep doing it over and over again. Do you finally get it down?
Just keep writing. You just have to keep going.
And that's how you get decent at it or better at it than just by doing something over and over again. So I finally got this thing, but it was like 2 a.m. because my brain, like most entrepreneurs, never shuts down, at least the successful ones. The guys that say, I'm shutting off at 4 o'clock, I'm going to be with this, I'm going to go drink with my buddies at the bar, I'm going to go hang out with this. Listen, that's cool. And you need to enjoy your life. You have to have some enjoyment in life. That's 100% true. But if you're really focused on taking anything in your life to the next level, like you did, you have to have that level of commitment to say, I'm not going to shut it off. Your brain's always saying, that's not enough. That's not good enough. My first divorce will be a testament to that. I worked all the hours. I mean, you couldn't work any more hours. Right. That you're constantly going in on a Sunday. Oh, no, wait, I got to work on this. I got to work on this. So I got this project going. I got this. You do have to shut it down at some point. And the creativity comes out of those shutdown points.
Right.
This podcast came from that, where I went to Florida to get away, and I went 1 year before. I recorded a dozen podcasts and then stopped and focused on my business. The pandemic hit. I was like, went into overdrive. I got to figure out a way to do this. And the cleaning business, you'd think everybody wants you in your house to clean after, that's not the case. They don't want anybody in your house.
Yeah, stay away.
My phones were not ringing. Well, we did good, but we had to diversify into other things, which kept us going and more outdoor work. But I focused on that and I let the podcast go. Then this past year, my buddy, which owns a very successful HVAC company, goes, hey, you ever going to pick that back up again? I says, I got to. He goes, listen, man, they're pretty good. I think you should keep at it. 75 yeah. episodes later, between January and now.
So wow.
I decided to awesome. Hit it with a full cannon. I took a couple weeks off just recently to refocus and say, what do I want to do going into season number 3? What do I want to have that's going to be the best content? When you contacted me, I'm like, oh, this will be a great fit, because the lessons you're going to learn from one to the other, and you've done it as an entrepreneur. Going back full circle again, I tend to get a little bit off habit from time to time. The CBD aspect of people, entrepreneurs dealing with stress, never being able to shut down, always having that constant anxiety, which is clearly not good for your health. I don't care who you are. Stress kills. It just does. Having the ability to take something that is not from a pharmacy, that is not chemical in nature necessarily, pure chemical, something that maybe somebody's testing out on you, something that really is more natural based, to be able to free your brain and open your brain to relax and have creativity, because creativity is what produces things in this world. People that were creative and had an engineering mindset to come up with something, you know, they're the people that succeeded in this world no matter what, the people that could invent things. Well, they had to have that ability to stop and think. When you're constantly going around on a rabbit wheel over and over and over again, you can't think. You're in the logistical aspects. You're not in the aspect of creativity. So I feel something right. Like CBD. Again, I don't know a ton about it, but I do know friends that take it. And I've had a friend of mine, good friend of mine, said it's literally saved his life. Because he was going down a path of depressants and anxiety medication and all these things. And he literally said, I'm off all of it. I feel better. I wake up in the morning. I don't feel like the entire wind's been sucked out of me. And I have the ability now to start a new day with a new breath going. And right. I'm going.
And so for him, CBD, like me, it's a modality. It's not the cure. It helped change something in his mind, in his systems, you know, his central nervous system, something in there that it helped to change. And then he was able to have a better mindset, get better sleep, get better recovery, things like that. So this is, I think, you know, just to kind of explain a little bit more like how CBD works. So first off, hemp has been a medicine for, you know, more than 2000 years. Like people have used it for things. And then it became illegal and now it's legal again, but no one really understood how it worked. And so back in the early 90s, there were some scientists, medical marijuana started becoming a thing again or becoming like legal. And so the scientists wanted to figure out like how THC was working in the body. Like how was it helping with cancer patients and people like that? And so what they did is they took a radioactive isotope, put it on a THC molecule and put it inside a human body. And they watched what it did and how it affected things. And from that, they found that there was this whole entire system in the body that no one knew anything about. You know, I've spoken to many doctors about this and they're like, they didn't teach us that in medical school, but people are starting to talk about it now in continuing education. And it's called the endocannabinoid system. And it's named after, you know, sort of the cannabis molecules. And what they also found is that your body creates endogenous cannabinoids. So you make natural cannabinoids that actually feed that endocannabinoid system. One of the molecules that you create is called anandamide. It's associated with the runner's high. So it helps with the upregulation of serotonin and it makes you feel good. It's actually very closely related to THC. But these endogenous cannabinoids feed your endocannabinoid system. You know, so and your endocannabinoid system is connected to your respiratory system, your digestive system, your central nervous system, your immune system. It's connected to every system in your body. So if one gets out of whack, it can help pull everything else out of whack. And so what CBD does, it's like a super multivitamin for your endocannabinoid system. So it goes in and it feeds, you know, these the endocannabinoid system. So if your body's not creating enough cannabinoids, it helps pull it back into homeostasis and gives it and helps your body kind of heal itself. Rather than, it doesn't cure anything for anyone. It's just a supplement, like vitamin C and zinc and vitamin D and things like that. It's just a supplement that you take and it helps your body work more efficiently. It helps your body heal itself. And that's why people are able to get better sleep. It also helps reduce chronic inflammation. It helps with anxiety and things like that. Those are like other benefits of CBD, but that's the sort of I call it the bro science, is it's like a super multivitamin for your endocannabinoid system.
That's so I get the picture that it can take whatever it is and kind of balance it. So whatever you've got going whack out, it just kind of balances it out. I mean, it sounds like a really good, really good thing. How can our listeners find out a little bit more about your company and what you can do? Again, entrepreneurs go through this stuff, and I think this is a really good way or good aspect to look at to manage these, I hate to say manage because that's a really shitty word, but how to handle these different things that go on in your life, how to balance.
A tool.
Yeah, a tool. Yeah. Thank you. How can they find out a little bit more about your company and contact you?
If you go to my website, which is www.nw-recovery.com, You could also go to Naked Warrior Recovery, but some people may not want to write naked in their search engine. So I made it NW-Recovery. you could put it in nakedwarriorrecovery.com and it'll take you to the site. But that was sort of an afterthought. I was like, oh my God, what if people don't want to write naked into their search engine? Cause it's a little risque. Who knows what's going to pop up. So you can put that in there. But one of the things that you talked about earlier was sleep, and CBD has helped me get better quality of sleep at night. I think all people need different amount of sleep, but quality of sleep is really what you're looking for. But you definitely need to sleep every night. And I was doing a little research recently on like the world record, who stayed awake the longest for sleep. Do you know who that was or how long that was for the longest? There actually isn't one, because the Guinness Book of World Records will not sanction a challenge for no sleep, because if you go long enough without sleep, you will literally die. Like your body will break down, you will become chronically ill, and you will die. It's safer to take an experimental spaceship into space and skydive back to Earth than it is to go for a long period of time without sleep. So, you know, CBD helps. There's other minor cannabinoids in our products. You know, we have CBN, which helps with the kind of the sedative piece of it in our sleep formula. We're also working on some CBG, some other minor cannabinoids from the hemp plant to help have some similar benefits as CBD. So there's a lot out there. It's really new science. I would say be careful in what products you use. Someone asked me once upon a time, like, what's the difference between your product and the CBD that I can get out of the gas station? And I was like, well, what's the difference between, you know, sushi from like a 5-star restaurant and sushi from the gas station? Are you really willing to roll the bones with gas station sushi? So why would
I'm going to tell you a quick story. So I had LASIK surgery years ago. Now, when LASIK came out, early 2000s or so, I guess it really started hitting the forefront. And at the time, you saw these different doctors out there. And what you just said brought this out of me. So I went to two or three different doctors, and this one said, we're going to fix your eye and you're going to do this and this and you're going to be done. It's going to be $1,000. Okay. Go to the next guy. We're going to do the same thing with you, but it's going to be, you know, $1,500, but you know, we're going to have a recovery and we're going to follow up with you. And you know, we do this extra. Great. No problem. Go to the next guy. $3,000. And I'm like, man, you're expensive. And he goes, well, we're going to do this and we do one at a time. The reason we do one eye and then balance and do another eye is because there is a rare possibility, but a real possibility of you losing vision in one eye. And the one thing we don't want to do is have you blind in both eyes if we do the process at the same time. So we want you to be done. Guess which one I hired? $3,000.
$3K. Here you go.
I didn't want to hear the nice stuff. I wanted to hear what if. There's got to be a second side to it. So this guy's charging $3,000, but he's being honest. Here's your money, dude.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
You know, I want you to tell the truth. And I think, you know, when you're selling a product, again, people can go to Walmart, Target, and you're going to have four products of the same shit on the shelves. Okay. They get to pick between one of the four. All four might be the same. They generally are not. The cheaper product is cheap. It's garbage. Nothing good is cheap and nothing cheap is good. So there is, you're going to buy an inexpensive product, but as my wife commonly says, you buy it once, you buy it twice. Buy the cheap product, it's probably going to not work. And that would be a good day if it didn't work. It might actually work adversely against you by buying the shitty product. The mid product probably will do the job, but it's only made of certain things that might do the job for you. It might not. Who knows? Top level product has brand recognition. It could be just as good as the second product, but it's got brand recognition behind it. Chances are, though, with the Thai brand recognition, what I have found is they don't want to look stupid. So if they're having a top level product and it's a pristine product and it's the third most expensive product, they have too much to lose by selling you a shitty product. So they're going to give you a good product, I would imagine. So I'm always between the second. I'm never the first. I'm usually always the third, because I like trusting reliability and recognition and where I buy and what I buy and now who I buy from. So I appreciate your time today, man. I know this has gone a lot longer. I usually do these for about 30 minutes. Your story's just kept going. I'm going, this is awesome, man.
Sometimes I get a little chatty, I guess. I don't know.
That's man, that makes great. I mean, our listeners love it. Most people that listen to this, they listen to this. They don't watch it. It's nice. Cool. Right. I'm not really trying to be a YouTube, whatever. I don't care about that. I grew up in the day where I listened to radio because as a kid, we did not have a TV. It was black and white with the rabbit ears.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. To move the rabbit ears to the left. Stand there, Rob, stand there, hold this thing while you're holding on to the metal. That was it. So I grew up listening to AM radio. All right. I grew up in the Northeast and AM radio was pretty easy to listen to a whole bunch of different stations. So I liked the voice, the Howard Stern earlier on, your Rush Limbaugh earlier on. I tend to be more of a conservative guy. So I listened to these, you know, even Bill O'Reilly a long time ago. I listened to these, the voice, and that's what inspired me. It's what I heard because I didn't get to see it. So like, I'm not necessarily a visual person, but I listen to something and that's how it sound. And people learn differently. People learn from seeing something. People learn something from reading something. People learn something from listening. I could tell your retention is much better of a book, no matter who you are, if you can spend the time to do it. But I want to really thank you again, number one, for your service to the country and your sacrifice and keeping us all safe here. And as an American-born boy that has is about as patriotic as they come, there's two flags on every single one of my trucks. Thank you, first and foremost, for what you've done and those that have sacrificed like you and beyond. So I appreciate you personally, and I will make sure all the notes here are in the show notes in the blog that I'll write afterwards, and of course on the YouTube channel. So it's been an honor to have you here, and thank you very much for your time.
Awesome, I appreciate you being on. And if I could, I would like to give a discount code to your listeners, whoever's listening to this,
if
they're
great.
Interested. And we can make it up right now. I mean, we can make it Lion20, LYON20.
Okay.
And you know, they'll save 20% off of if they decide to, you know, go to the website and purchase something. So,
well, that's very generous of you, and certainly not needed. I think just the benefit of this, you know, helping people and you using this personally, your personal experience with it. Like you said, everybody goes through different things, but you've had a lot of things you've obviously had to overcome in life. You talked about, you know, alcohol, and I can relate to that. You've talked about, you know, prescription medication. I can relate to that. I think a lot of people can relate to that. So having a good resource or good product that people can rely on and benefit from, I think is tremendous, especially today. It's a tough world to believe in something. And when you find something you can believe in, just like a contractor or whatever, when you find somebody you really like or wherever you're getting a product from, you stay with that. Because that works. Like you said before, you found the best source for what you needed to develop the best product you have, and you haven't found anybody else. And you stated that because you don't want to compromise. That's what an entrepreneur does.
I continue, you know, I continue looking at processes, and my suppliers, they're continuing to improve their processes. So they're continuing to stay ahead of their competition. So that's all, it's all good. That it's win-win for all of us. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, sir. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You got it.